There will be spoilers ahead. Lots of spoilers, so be careful, won't you? This week on Max Mike Movies, we're crossing a bridge over very troubled waters. John Waters, that is. This illustrious filmmaker has run the gamut from what the f*** to, hey, that was pretty good, and wow, John Travolta looks better in a dress than I thought. This week, as the third entry in the series, Because Patton Says So, we're looking at his choice from the Criterion Closet, Female Trouble. Patton picked this, but why he picked it and what he thought of it, we'll leave to the end of the show. What simply won't wait till the end of the show is my introducing our host, Max, I'm not wearing that dress with those shoes, Levine. Give us some fashion tips, Max.
Fabulousness is a state of mind, not a state of clothing.
Please note his middle name is Plaid. And me, I'm...
It is not. That's Plaid. There's an E at the end.
Oh, dear gods. And me, I'm the grip to your best boy. That sounded best dirty.
Wow, that sounds dirty when you say it like that.
Mike, is my wig off kilter loose? We don't usually do this kind of thing at Max Mike Movies, but I think it might be best to warn you that if you were thinking of watching this week's movie ahead of time, do a little research first.
Yeah.
Not say if it was good or bad yet. Just go look it up. You'll be glad you did. Mm. What we're glad you did is give us answers to our
poll question.
Last week, we were simply dying to know which actor's success totally baffles you. Surprise, surprise. Oh, Max, no!
Okay.
Oh, well, I'm glad you got over death that quickly.
Yep.
Anyway, surprise, surprise, you had opinions, and here they are. Roland Hardy answered first with, quote, Pee-wee Herman, end quote. Huh. Well, there you go. Thanks, Roland.
I know you are, but what am I?
I don't know, and I've never had an answer, and I never will. Val Coons of Q Footsteps fame, it's a podcast, check it out, wrote, quote, Kevin Costner and Gary Cooper. Neither one of them could act their way out of a paper bag, though I will say No Way Out is a good movie, and Gary Cooper is adorable, or is that adorbs? Is that a thing?
And I think it's totes adorbs.
Okay. In Ball of Fire, and I know this may be sacrilegious, but Bette Davis, she's a grouchy scenery chewer to me. End quote.
Wow.
I agree on 2 out of 3 counts. Thanks, Val. Mm,
that's interesting. I wouldn't have thought of that.
Me either, but hey, that's why we ask you folks.
Yeah.
George Saulnier's response was, quote, Jared Leto, self-indulgent, pretentious, actory. He's the worst part of every movie I've ever seen him in, end quote. And I agree with that, too.
Yeah, I can't really, can't argue with that.
Thanks, George. Gee, a lot of my answers are coming out already. Tyler Stewart agreed with George. Also, he added, quote, Keanu Reeves, I respect that he puts a huge amount of work in training, but the man can't act, end quote. Thanks, Tyler.
Well, acting isn't everything for an actor.
He's just such a nice person.
He's so sweet. You know, you want him to be better than he actually is.
Yeah, because he does put a lot of work into it. And what he does with his money, I took him off my list because I can't say bad things about him, even though I don't. Yeah. Anyway. Dave Macman sent us quite the little paragraph. Quote, having worked in marketing, there are, happily, an infinite number of paths to success. Most actors I just don't notice, and therefore don't notice their success. If I do notice them, it is often because they have some level of charisma that they bring to every role, and that I want to see again. Or sometimes it's because I hear their name a lot. I can accept that Tori Spelling has fans, but it is hardly baffling.
I can't.
But it is hardly baffling that this happened for her. Daddy. Similarly, sticking with 90210, it amazes me that Gabrielle Carteris has been so successful. But again, not
she
baffling.
She has?
I don't know
her. She has?
That's the first name time I've heard her name, so there you go.
I know who she is. I know she had she was on that show and she had a talk show.
Totes adorbs. Not a lot of roles would be available to her due to her size and shape. I don't know what that means, Dave, but that's what he wrote.
Either.
So she succeeded in positions where she didn't have to act. Expanding to Star Wars, I'm quite surprised that Carrie Fisher turned out to be such an interesting person. I used to be baffled by the success of Gene Wilder until I read his autobiography, which was excellent. I don't think of him as a great comedian, but he was in some of what were my favorite comedies of all time, end quote. Oh, that is very much. Thanks, Dave.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Benjamin Carl sent up, quote, I'm not a fan of Casey Affleck. I don't think Casey Affleck's a fan of Casey Affleck. No, actually, I think he is, but I find him unappealing and unconvincing in nearly every role. He's tolerable as a side character, but his tortured voice and appearance are utterly distracting to me as a lead. All of that said, I do recognize that general audience members rarely fall in behind an actor because of the performance proficiency. As David Mackman touched on. It's charisma, it's personal attraction, it's seeing something of yourself or the person you want to be in someone else. Stars, especially unlikely ones, or those who mirror our own faults, are proof that we too can make it, that our dreams are not out of reach, end quote. You know,
that's a good point.
Yeah, I'm not much of a fan of Casey Affleck either, but thanks for the insight, Javi.
That's intriguing.
Yeah. Tim Potter said, quote, Nicolas Cage, I don't think he is a very good actor at all, and yet he still makes a ton of movies, end quote. Are you folks reading my tiny mind?
I don't know. I like Nick Cage. He never says no. He doesn't seem to think, he doesn't seem to say, I wonder if this is a good movie.
Or idea.
Yeah.
Because, yeah. Adam Mark, our scholar, has multiple sort of answers. Quote,
sort of.
The Chrises, Chris Pratt, Chris Pine, Chris Evans, and Chris Hemsworth. I go out of my way not to see their films, except Star Trek, obvs. I guess that's another one. Obvs, that's what he says.
Obvs. Yeah.
None are particularly good actors, but they're barely given any range to work with, so they coast. They're all Marvel Universe or adjacent. Except for Chris Pine, I guess Star Trek is Marvel Universe adjacent. And our muscly, blondish wiseasses, which I am in real life compounding my contempt. Without the CGI focus group tested quips and one-liners that they blurt out after the Empire State Building blows up or whatever, they'd be nothing. Even if you held a gun to my head, I could not say which is which. Come on, America, you can do better, end quote. Well, that's a lot of Chris.
Adam, were you bitten by a Chris when you were little? It's okay. This is a safe space. You can tell us.
What's that rash? It's rather what, Chris-shaped.
Would you show us on the doll where Chris touched you?
Wow. Okay. Thanks, Adam. I'm not thanking Max, though. Seth Jacobs quickly added, quote, Judd Nelson, end quote.
Ooh.
Thanks,
and Seth. His nostrils.
Well, I don't know that was a big deal ever made of Judd Nelson. He had, like, a handful of films.
During the Brat Pack phase, he was huge in the, what was it, 80s. And then I think he disappeared.
Yeah.
But I get that. It's not like he was a one-hit wonder. He was around for a few years, and he was like, ooh, swoon.
Bumbling upsets Holmes no end.
Yeah.
He's kind of bumbling, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
And lastly, we swing over to the website, that oasis of taste and refinement, where Bumpy Pucks is sold by the metric ton. Vince, our wrangler of all things mysteriously Canadian, took time out from Walrus Wrestling to pen, quote, I just don't understand what the appeal of Adam Sandler is in any role. I didn't like him on Saturday Night Live or in any movie I've seen him in. He lacks all charisma to me, but apparently I am in the minority, end quote. Adam Sandler. That's a name.
That's tricky. I know a lot of people just friggin' love Adam Sandler. I've enjoyed him and stuff. But I also know there's just a lot about him that sets a lot of people's teeth on edge. There's just all the mugging and the over-the-top stuff. He can do restrained, but it's not his default setting.
Well, maybe we need to see him in a Shakespearean role. But anyway,
we don't.
I would totally see that. I think that would be awesome, especially if he just played it like Adam Sandler. I think that'd be hilarious. But especially if it was like one of the dramas or the tragedies, that'd be great.
Oh, yeah. I can just see him trying to do King Lear. Yeah.
Actually, you know
blow what? Wind and crack your cheeks.
See, I would watch that. Actually, I would watch a Shakespeare play with all the people everyone just mentioned.
Oh my god! Okay, that would be kind of awesome,
wouldn't it? But anyway,
it would.
That's them. How about us, Max? Who is your least favorite Hollywood actor in this respect?
in this respect, as in, like, I don't understand why he had a career. Steven Seagal.
Oh, dear God. Well,
he was around for a long time, and he keeps appearing in things. People keep putting him in stuff. He was in, like, one of the Machete movies. I don't get it. I never understood it. He's not a martial artist of any kind of impressive nature. Chuck Norris is better than he is. He has no charisma. He can barely speak, never mind act. I don't get him. I don't get how he had such a career.
You just have the one answer?
Yeah. I mean, there's a whole bunch people I don't like, but he's the one who baffles me.
I mean, I'll agree with the Chuck Norris thing, because Chuck Norris, to me, is the dullest martial artist I've ever seen. He actually makes martial artists boring.
Yeah. Like, he has no charisma and no presence.
He has a mustache.
I don't get Chuck Norris. I don't get Chuck Norris either, but I didn't want to say that because the internet loves him and they'll murder me.
Whatever.
What about you? Who baffles you?
Daniel Day-Lewis.
Really?
I really just don't. He, for me, and Jared Leto might as well be the same person. It's like, look how much I'm acting!
But
it's like,
calm Lewis down, actually lady. Does a good job.
I disagree. I think that what he does, and this is the problem I have with Lewis, he doesn't care if there's anybody else on camera. He doesn't act with them. He acts near them. And his acting, to me, is just so overblown. I'm so in the role. And I'm so important as an actor, I can't stand it. And he just, to me, it's like there's him and there's the rest of the cast and everything I've seen him in. And Leto, same thing, exact same thing. I don't like him. Owen Wilson, I don't like him. And I also just don't understand, why do people find him appealing?
Wow, I can't believe you don't like Owen. Wow.
That's exactly the reason right there. It's like an itch, you know, and it's like in a place that you can't do in public, so you have to just sort of deal with it. Ben Stiller.
I like that image.
Ben Stiller, same thing. I'm not a big fan of Ben. Early on, I didn't mind him. Like, there's something about Mary. I didn't have any problem with him in that. But then later on, it's like, you're trying to be something, but it's almost like you're trying to be Peter Sellers. Like, oh, look at all the different characters I do. It's like, none of them are actually very funny, though. And Peter Sellers, what's that word? Was. But, yeah.
Okay.
Well, that's all well and good. So, with that, we close this portion of our show so that we can make way for a brand new feature. The poll question!
What? But we didn't discuss this!
We're doing the same thing.
I'll have you up in front of the board for this.
We're doing the same thing that was meant to be a joke.
Ah, well, I'll have to clear that with the board.
There's no board, it's you and me.
Yes, there is. It's over there, propped up against the wall, and it has a nail in it.
Yeah, it's holding up your talent. Anyway...
Ooh. At least something's holding mine up.
I don't need mine to be held up. It's there for everyone to see.
There it is, pooled around your feet.
Why is everyone laughing? I don't... Anyway, the poll question, we'd like to know, what is the cheapest made movie you've ever come to love? Who took 25 bucks, some string and tape, and made gold? Let us know in the yada, 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 yada. Now, we're off together.
Facts.
Budget, $25,000. I think this is now the cheapest film we have ever covered here on Max Mike Movies.
Yeah, I think so. I think...
Because I think we did one for $100,000, so this would be less.
Yep.
Take. We aren't sure, as it didn't have an actual theatrical run, and there's no figures, but...
It's been running as a midnight show for 50 years in a lot of places. It's got to have taken in some money.
Well, and I'm betting that if you tried to look up the take for Rocky Horror, they would only give you the initial run, which was a huge failure. I don't know another film that's been running, let's see, 75. Next year it'll be for 50 years in the theater, so there you go.
Yeah.
As they say, any press is good press. Fellow movie critic Rex Reed really did not care for this film and wrote in his review, quote, "Where do these people come from? Where do they go when the sun goes down? Isn't there a law or something?" End quote. This was the quote used not only on the movie posters, but the box of the eventual home video releases as well.
Oh, say what you want about John Waters. The man knew how to spin.
Yes, he did. Truth is stranger than fiction, but Divine wasn't strange at all. See, Waters tried to gorilla shoot Divine in full costume and burn makeup so he could get honest local crowd reactions, but nobody looked twice.
Ooh.
Which, is that a comment on Baltimore? Because I, yeah, whatever, the burn-faced, you know, overweight person in the slinky dress, we've seen that 100 times.
Another one?
Yeah, pretty, well, of course, with Waters, that might actually have been true. You know how the movies always make those injection scenes look real?
Yeah.
Well, this time it was.
Let me guess. This was. Oh.
Yeah. Yuck. Okay. Great.
Oh, they're actually shooting up. Okay. Wonderful. Yeah.
Not drugs. I hope it really wasn't eyeliner, but whatever. Yeah. That was indeed a newborn baby. One of the actors in the movie was in the final stages of her pregnancy while shooting and agreed to let her baby be used in the birth scene. Yay.
Wow. Well.
Yeah.
I don't know what to say to that. Okay.
Interestingly, the...
I do know what to say to that. Hello, Child Protective Services?
Yeah, we'll get to that, too. Yeah, apparently the mother's mother, or her mother, the mother-in-law, that was the first time she'd seen the baby. She flew in from England, and she was brought to the set, and it's like, oh, there's my grandson.
Why? Lying on top of Divine.
Yeah.
Okay.
Or coming out of Divine. Anyway. The original shooting title of this movie was Rotten Mind, Rotten Face, but Waters changed it fearing a very particular response from critics. You might be able to guess what it was.
Yes, rotten movie.
Exactly. You might wonder where John Waters got all those, well, normal people for the courtroom scene. A lot of them were parents and relatives of the actors and crew.
Of course they were.
Yeah. Divine's nightclub act might seem off the cuff and bizarre, but this wasn't the first time they performed it. In San Francisco, Divine would wheel a shopping cart full of mackerel on stage, whip fish into the audience, and claim responsibility for different crimes. Now that's entertainment.
Mackerel?
Mackerel.
Jeez.
I know. You did it so much better with flounder.
You should do... Flounder has much better range, and it just makes a better statement.
And let's face it, it's a more resilient fish.
It is, much more.
I have no idea what that means. But Divine on Divine. Yes, that is indeed Divine having his way with his female self, though a stunt double was used to play Dawn Davenport in that scene. The world premiere of this movie was held at the Las Palmas Theater in Hollywood, which was, by that time, a porn theater.
Oh, of course it
was. There was a kind of secret premiere held ahead of time at a prison. Yeah. Somehow, this is indeed a member of the Criterion Collection, which we've talked about in previous films, or episodes, I should say. While there was no death penalty in Baltimore at the time of filming, there was by the time the movie premiered. Coincidence? I don't know. Waters has been outspoken about his use of LSD, particularly when he used to go to the movies, and, this might not be a surprise, when making his earlier films, of which this is one.
I'm shocked. Shocked, I tell you.
Yeah. As far as trivia goes, that's all I could find of any interest. Do you have any other trivia, Max?
Well, regarding the scene where Divine, in effect, you know, plays the person having sex with her, you know, basically Divine having sex with Divine. That was she made good use of that later on when a drunk was heckling her and said, "Go f*** yourself," to which immediately Divine responded, "I already have." You know, I got to respect that.
Okay.
One other thing, if you look on Rotten Tomatoes for this movie.
Yeah.
It has a 90% critic rating and an 85% audience score.
I can't wait to find out if that holds true in our little show. Because, well, we already know, but you don't. I guess we should get to the...
Deep breath.
Can't
deep
get
breath.
The plot started this morning. We should get on to the plot. It's 1960. It's Baltimore, and it's probably raining. Sorry, that's a deeper. Dawn Davenport, played by Divine, is part of a small group of nasty girls at a public high school. They break rules, flaunt authority, and are, in general, no damned good. It's Christmas, and all Dawn can think about is getting a pair of cha-cha heels as a present, stating that there will be hell to pay if she doesn't. Well, she doesn't, So she throws a fit, ruins the holiday for her family, and flees the house, trying to hitch a ride to who knows where. Some degenerate, played by Divine, out of drag, picks her up, takes her to a junkyard, and has sex with her. Dawn steals his wallet. Suddenly, it's 9 months later, and Dawn is about to give birth. Literally about to give birth. She calls the father, trying to get money from him, but he brushes her off as she stole his wallet. I think he stole her wallet. Dawn gives birth and starts the long, lonely, lovely path of motherhood. Sort of. To earn money, she works crap jobs, sometimes walks the streets, and teams up with her high school chums to rob houses. Time passes quickly, and suddenly Dawn's daughter is 9 and acts almost exactly like her. On a random trip to the salon, to make herself feel better, Dawn is discovered by the very exclusive pair that run the place, and thus begins her ascent to stardom. She also marries her hairdresser who lives next door with his hideous aunt, but that doesn't last long. She throws him out, divorces him, and sort of tries to continue to be a single parent. Or really, she just yells at her daughter all the time. Suddenly, it's time for Dawn to become a real model, and her benefactors push her further and further until she's set to debut at some local club in an act that involves her rubbing fish all over herself, jumping on a trampoline, and brandishing a gun. She shoots at least one person in her audience and is arrested. Finally, facing her karma, she's charged with multiple counts of murder, one being her own daughter. Convicted, Dawn goes to the electric chair remorseless, thinking that her execution is the ultimate form of art. Oh, and she had acid thrown on her face and jailed her ex-husband's mother, and she yelled a lot. The end.
The film.
Yeah, I think you covered most of it.
Yeah. Max, had you seen this before?
I had not. I had, of course, heard of it, because everyone has. This movie is very famous.
Mm.
This is one of the great cult movies.
I would agree. I had seen it before. In a theater, believe it or not. Yeah. I saw it at a Schlock Around the Clock festival at the Summer of, in which it fit very well. I believe this was the same Schlock Around the Clock festival where I saw Ilsa, She-Wolf of the SS, Surf Nazis Must Die, and I don't even remember. I think Evil Crotch. What else was there? I don't remember. But yeah.
Evil Crotch?
It was actually It was an Italian horror film, and it should have... No, it was Evil Clutch. That's right. And it should have been Evil Crotch, which gives you an idea where the horror lay.
Oh, lied, dear.
Whatever. Laid. Anyway. However, it was a long time ago, and I didn't remember much of this film. So, actually, Max and I watched this together.
Yes, we did.
And we bonded over this.
Yes, we bonded with neither one of us willing to look at the other.
It was an odd bonding, but that's been true for the last 279 episodes anyway.
Yep.
The first shock for me came with the absolute first thing that pops up under the screen. Really? Warner Brothers. Huh. Well, there you go. Warner Brothers distributed this somehow.
Before we do that, I would like to read something from a review or description or what have you of this movie from The New Yorker.
At The New Yorker saw this?
This is from Richard Brody, a critic at The New Yorker.
Oh, okay.
Just a one line here, one part. Waters smashes the boulderizing codes... boulderizing, I'm not sure how you pronounce it, I've only ever seen it written. Boulderizing codes of Hollywood morality with self-consciously delicious parodies of classic Hollywood genres and tropes. The resulting feast of sex, violence, cruelty, and frivolity mocks sentimental notions of family, work, and love, and turns the egomaniacal furies of pop culture inside out.
Huh. What did you think about that since you pulled the quote?
It made me think of the movie differently.
It's making me think of the movie differently, too. I wish you had said this at the end of the show. But
I just want to put that out there, and we'll incorporate it as we go along or at the end.
Let's come back to that. Definitely remind me before we head off to decide if we liked it or not. We should talk about the act.
The what?
The act.
I'm losing you. You're fading out. You know, the what?
Actors.
I
mean, there's really
there were actors in this.
Yes. So,
I mean, besides Divine, I mean, Divine's an actor.
Yeah, that's an argument we could have. So, okay, Divine.
Yeah.
Like them or dislike them. And to be fair, I don't know their pronouns because Divine passed away before this was a thing. I'm going to go with mm-hmm. them just to be safe.
Sure.
Like them or not, Divine was a presence.
Yeah.
Divine was outspoken. Divine was not taking anybody's crap unless you were a dog.
That's another movie, and I don't want to talk about that.
Yeah. I don't, I can't really, it's hard to comment on their acting when you can't tell how much of it is actually acting or just Divine. Like, did John Waters write this part for Divine because it's stuff Divine would have said anyway?
Yeah, I mean, you got to say, a lot of Divine's dialogue, it could easily have been improvised.
Yeah. Made me wonder, are there any outtakes to this film? And if so, how would you tell?
I have trouble believing that there is anything he did not include, except, well, we'll get to that. But, yeah, Divine is less an actor and more just sort of a force of nature.
Yeah.
Just something... Not that performs, but that you unleash.
Yeah. Well, I wouldn't even say unleash because that implies some sort of control.
Yeah.
I think it's more like you just aim at Divine and then Divine does things.
And you get out of the way. You
now,
know,
to be fair,
I'll go with that.
Was it Polyester where she played the mother originally? Yes, I think it was. And that was like...
She plays a mother in Hairspray, too.
Maybe it's Hairspray I'm thinking of. Mm. That was probably her most mainstream role. And she played it more or less straight, which is fine. I find it hard to comment on Divine's acting because I'm not sure that that's... I don't know how much of it's acting. I think it's just, do you enjoy Divine's performance? And I will say there are things in this film I do not enjoy. But I think Divine is... totally and utterly themselves, and you have to at least appreciate the lengths they're willing to go through for a role. For example, there's a scene where Dawn Davenport is running away, and she comes to a, I guess you could call it a river, it's a big brook or a small river, and literally just jumps in, gets across in full drag and wig, gets to the opposite shore and keeps going. Turns out it was sleeting at that point.
Ooh.
Actually sleeting. So the water can't be in any way warm.
That's dedication.
And in one take, in heels, not only did Divine make it to the river, make it across the river, but they actually made it to their mark and came up where they were supposed to, and their wig didn't even move. So,
wow.
You know, I will give Divine credit. Enjoy might be pushing it. The rest of the actors are friends.
This is like the room level performances for the most part.
Well,
even worse in some cases. I mean, the one thing I will say is some of them are very high energy.
Yes.
I mean, Mink Stoll.
Yeah.
If that really is your name.
Yeah.
As her daughter, Taffy, she at least, you know, she remembers all her lines.
Well, and it's funny because by absolute coincidence, Max and I just started watching this series on FX called Feud, and it was the one that has to deal with Joan Crawford and Betty Davis. And I couldn't help but wonder if there was a little Baby Jane reference going on.
Oh, I wondered. That could be.
But I
said the outfit, even the hair.
The bad
really.
Makeup, yeah.
Yeah.
I will, my note on acting, I will agree with Max. I say acting ranges from barely adequate to terrible.
Yeah, my question is, was that intentional? I mean, are these people just that bad? Or did Waters say, I want this to be terrible. I want you to make this as stilted and artificial as you can.
Well,
given that none of these people went on to do anything except a couple of other John Waters movies, I don't know.
No, but I will say that some of even the lesser performers, they actually have a photo on IMDb, which is a lot more that can be said for some of the actors we've seen in some of our other shows. I don't know. I mean, it definitely has the feeling of this is a bunch of John Waters' friends and he wanted to make movies and they were available. Mm-hmm. Certain of his actors, Mink Stoll and Edith Massey specifically, were in a number of his films. And I think David Lockery, who plays Donald Dasher, is also... Like, there was a little group of, I think they're called the Dreamlanders, that were in his early films. And his childhood home, which I'm guessing is the stand-in for Don Davenport's home, was in a lot of his films. No matter what, whether we end up liking the film or not, you got to give Waters credit. The man wanted to make films, and he made them.
He made them, even though he with no backing and no support, and he did. And say what you will about him, he is has become an icon.
Very much so.
Even people who've never seen his movies know who John Waters is.
Sure.
They know that bizarre pencil tip mustache and the creepy googly eyes. I'm sorry, John. I know that's not your fault. And I still remember, I think it was the very first time I ever saw John Waters, and I had never seen a John Waters movie. It was in an announcement video in a theater, you know, like they used to do the, please put your trash in the trash can.
Eat this, Timmy.
This was one of, exactly. This was one of the ones about smoking. And it's just him standing there enjoying a cigarette going, hi, I'm John Waters. I should tell you that in this theater, no smoking is allowed. So you can't enjoy a delicious cigarette like this until you're outside of the theater. Once you're outside, smoke all you want. But when you're inside, I'm afraid you'll just have to watch me do it. And I just remember thinking, okay, this is kind of brilliant.
Well, you know what's funny? That is his one major regret. He wishes that he had stopped smoking a lot earlier.
Oh, well, I'll bet, because if I remember right, he smoked like a damn factory smokestack.
Yeah, and apparently he said quitting was really, really horrible, because, of course, I don't think he quit until, like, 15 years ago. So, yeah. I mean, and he's in his late 70s now. So that means he's
good for him for quitting.
I don't know if, how much difference is going to make at this point, but it couldn't hurt. So yeah there's actors in this. Was it social commentary? I think that there is meant to be a lot of social commentary in the film. The actors, there's a very big difference to me in I want people to seem utterly realistic, and I want people that can actually act. And there's a lot of times where people are kind of smiling when they shouldn't be. There's not a lot of feeling of character in a lot of them. There's just a lot of yelling, quite honestly. Even Don Davenport,
a lot of noise.
Mostly
it's a very
yells.
Loud movie.
Yeah.
I will say this, though, and this is the one thing that made me think this might be a put-on as far as the talent. Nobody looks at the camera.
No.
And that is a classic mark of bad actors, is they look at the camera.
Yeah, I'm just suddenly picturing
Paul. I'm looking at you, Sinatra.
Well, that also from that same show. I was actually thinking of Paul Vogt from a very sadly short-lived show called The Rerun Show, where they would reenact scripts. And he played Tom Willis of the Jeffersons, and as soon as he walked on set, he just stare right into the camera. Because, the guy who played Tom Willis stunk.
Yeah. If you go back and you look at clips from the Jeffersons and you see the guy who played, well, he did. He looked right in the camera.
Well, I'm guessing that's where his cue cards were, right?
Probably.
Yeah. I don't know. I think that Waters is reacting to a lot of things. I think Waters is reacting to so-called normalcy, so-called suburban life, etc.
Yeah, keep in mind, this was 1974.
Literally 50 years ago.
Yeah. And he was... I mean, that's one of the big arguments, is that he was attacking the normal sort of cliches or mores, both of the, not just of society mostly, but of Hollywood and the movies.
Right.
Because you saw a lot of movies, especially in the 50s, of the bad girl and the runaway, and it always ends up terribly.
Yeah.
So they end up dead or in jail, or they repent and become, I don't know.
Nuns.
Because
that happened once.
Yes, it did. I think it happened more than once, but yeah. And here he's saying, no, look at this. This is a person. Because Don Davenport is an unrepentantly horrible human being who does awful things and never regrets any of them, even up to her death. She views her execution as a performance. Yeah. And the whole thing of it like steps all over the ideas of, sorry,
but that happened once.
Steps all over the ideas, as I step over your lines, of motherhood and friendship and romance.
Friendship.
And it just says, friendship. It's like, it can all be awful. There are horrible people out there, and they can just twist everything that Hollywood tells you is wonderful and it isn't necessarily. It even starts off when she gives birth, which is, oh Lord, Dawn gives birth alone on a filthy couch in a hallway and bites through the umbilical cord herself.
Just so you know, condoms filled with liver, just so you know.
You know, that's worse somehow.
She had some nice fava beans afterwards. Yeah, one of my notes was this movie rewrites the definition of the word protagonist. Because Dawn is essentially the protagonist of the film. I'm trying to think of how the word or the prefix pro applies here.
We are supposed to sympathize or empathize or something are with the protagonist. Well, traditionally, you are. Yeah. You're supposed to want the protagonist to succeed, or at least you're supposed to be invested, where this is a movie where by the end I'm going, will you please execute her?
Yeah. It is a difficult film in a number of ways, because I think one of the things Waters was trying to do was literally shine a light on a segment of society nobody ever talks about, unless they're dramatizing it, in which case you point out there's a nice, clean, nobody gets hurt gunfight at the end where somebody relents or repents or whatever. And he's basically saying, no, there's horrible people out there. They live their horrible lives and they die horribly. And that's the way it goes. And along the way, there's comedy and showmanship and glamour and music and babies.
Except there's a little difference. A lot of other people have done there are horrible people out there. That's nothing new.
Yeah, but
everyone in this movie is horrible. Yeah. When you have a movie with lots of horrible people, there's always the every person, the common person, the decent one who's the contrast, who's the one you feel sorry for. Oh, they're all surrounded by these monsters. There's no one. There is nobody in this movie who is good, decent, or wholesome, drinks milk, brushes their teeth, whatever. At first, I thought, okay, Taffy is going to be the sympathetic character, you know, this poor kid who's dropped into this horrible life. No, she's just as awful as everyone else.
Well, to me, in a way, you can't blame her because look who she's living with.
Exactly, but in a traditional Hollywood movie, that she would rise above it. Well,
she joins the Hare Krishnas.
Yeah, and that's the only time I've ever, in real or fictional life, gone, you know, that's a good choice for her. The Hare Krishnas would be good for her.
Hair pimples for hairy fishnets? What?
Hairy fishnets. Just cough up some dough, Mac.
So, sort of cycling back a little bit to when you're talking about the directorial style of Waters, it's very flat. And in a way, it's either post-Ed Wood or pre-Wes Anderson, because he tends to be very straight on and he doesn't tend to vary his angles very much. But there's also a kind of falling in line with other filmmakers at the time. So the end of the 60s, the beginning of the 70s, Hollywood for some reason, well, actually it had a lot to do with the French cinema verite and the French New Wave, where they were basically saying, we're tired of all these bright colors and everything looking peachy and fun and happy. We want to make things look much more realistic. And I think that Waters takes that and really runs with it. So there's neighborhoods in here that are all too shabbily real. As a contrast, there's a couple of scenes in Good Will Hunting where we go to Will's house. The house where he's got a room because he doesn't even have an apartment, right? Mm-hmm. And you see Ben Affleck goes up to the door and knock on the door. And it's like, here's the yard and it's got junk in and it's not a very nice neighborhood and blah, 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 blah. And you probably thought at the time, most of us probably thought, it's like, wow, I'm glad I don't live there. All things considered, that is immaculate compared to any of the neighborhoods depicted here, which I believe he literally was like, oh, yeah, we'll film here. Like, I don't think he asked anybody. I honestly think some of the buildings were abandoned and the actors were just, you know, behind, like you'd knock at the door and they'd just show up. But there was like nothing behind them. And maybe people did live there. I don't know. But there is a much more, although he tends to lean more towards colorful, and by the late 60s, early 70s, Hollywood was like almost bleaching color out of their films. Things tended to be a lot less colorful at that time. And he brought a lot of the color back. So it's a weird mix of golden age of Hollywood, but the new, grittier reality. And I guess in some ways you have to say that he was kind of a pioneer for that. He was taking all these things and shoving them together for $5.
The thing is, I don't know about gritty reality, because this is horrible reality turned up to 11. Everything in this is just awful on a crazy-ass level. This movie, by the way, was rated X.
Well,
now,
it had to
excuse
be.
Excuse me, NC-17. It had to be.
Well, no, it would have been X at the time, because there was no NC-17 in 74.
That's what I mean. I said it would be NC-17. It was rated X, because there's full-frontal male nudity. And there's a lot of nudity in this, and none of it is erotic or attractive. It's all, and I think that's intentional. It's all none of this beauty of the human body. It's like, look at this. Ew.
Well,
it's vulgar, it's vile, it's gross. It's all of the Hollywood romance stuff thrown out the window and then having a piano dropped on it.
Well, one of my notes too was this movie crosses several genres and rapes them.
Pretty much.
I think honestly that at that time in his career, part of what Waters wanted to do was shock.
There's definitely, this movie has shock value written all over it.
And in some cases, I honestly don't think it adds to the film. Like, there's scenes where Divine in the male role is shoving his stuff right in the camera. It's not attractive, as you pointed out. It's not even ready. That's as far as I'm going to go with that. It's just, look, you have to look at this now. I honestly think that's all there is to it. And I think that he would, and so I suppose some people probably said he sold out when he started doing movies like Crybaby and Hairspray and stuff. But he managed to take some of his weird Baltimore wackiness and make it palatable for a bigger audience. Have you seen any of his later films like Hairspray, Crybaby, or...
Yeah, I saw Crybaby, I saw Hairspray, both the, you know, John Waters version and the musical.
Polyester.
Which is, I did not see, those are the only ones I've seen. I've never seen Polyester, I do not want to see Pink Flamingos, I've never seen Multiple Maniacs.
Well, that's the early stuff. I'm talking about the later stuff, so.
Yeah, I never saw Pecker, which I'm actually told is pretty good.
I really like Pecker. And the funniest part about Pecker is that nobody ever makes fun of his name. They all call him Pecker. And that's his, and he's fine with it. But, and it's, I think it's Edward Furlong who's playing this young photographer. And he's basically finding art in the everyday. It's sort of not entirely unlike John Waters. I enjoyed Polyester. I saw Crybaby when it came out, and I didn't even really know who John Waters was at the time. And it was a Johnny Depp film, of all things.
Yeah.
And it's actually pretty fun. So I guess you could say that he waters down later on. But he wouldn't have got there if he didn't make these.
I think the shock stuff is, you got to remember, we're looking at this 50 years ago, 50 years later. It's not as shocking. Well, it's not supposed to be as shocking, but we'll get to that. It's for a 1974 audience, this would have been unprecedented. This would have been horrific.
I'm going to disagree.
Really?
Because here's the thing. These days, you can show male frontal and not have to have an X rating. We've seen it. We've seen it rubbed in a window at us. Thank you, Eurotrip. Yeah. I think it's amazing what he got away with then, and that there is literally no way this film would be released now.
Oh, God, no. No.
In a way, that's why I'm going to disagree.
Less the shock value, more the violation of mores.
Well, do you mean mores?
Yeah.
So one of the interesting things is that the version we watched was sort of the repaired version. Like, there had been 3 to 4 minutes cut out of most of the released versions of this film.
Oh, okay.
And so for the Criterion Collection, and there was one other version, they restored the missing 4 minutes, which, okay. None of which was like, blah, 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 you know... the really naughty parts. It was literally just like little bits of dialogue and chasing and stuff like that.
You know, I do want to say, the dialogue is not really a strong point of this movie. There are a couple of lines that made me kind of either laugh or I don't even know. I experienced emotions I have no names for. At the beauty salon, what are their names? Donald and Donna Dasher they have to interview their clients. You can't get your hair done at the lipstick beauty salon until you pass an interview. And they're asking, what do you do? I work for the telephone company. Disqualified!
Yeah.
And I do like, we are upper class level burglars.
Burglars, yeah. That was, I mispronounced that. Should we keep rolling? Okay.
Or when Gator is leaving, I'm going to Detroit to find happiness in the auto industry.
Spoiler. Yeah. So I'm going to go to an email I received from Vince regarding this film. Mm. And he said he used to know folks that would be able to quote the entire film Rocky Horror style, actually pre-Rocky Horror style, right? Because it's 74, it's a year earlier than that. And his favorite quotes, he says, is, I want cha-cha heels. And we took you to a doctor when you were little, and he said you were most definitely retarded. Crime is beauty, and who wants to die for art? And
Richard Speck, guide me through this night.
Yeah, there's a lot of like worshiping at the altar of serial killers, which is
or mass murderers. Yeah. I mean, they mentioned it's pretty obscure now.
Yeah,
but when Dawn is, and again, spoilers, is strangling her daughter.
Right.
Spoiler. One of the people yells out, "Remember Alice Crimmins." Alice Crimmins was convicted of killing her own children in 1965.
Yay. Was it anywhere near Baltimore?
In spirit, sure.
I got to say, if there's one thing that does not come off well in this film, it's Baltimore.
Yeah, I think I don't know what John Waters' relationship with Baltimore is, because he uses it all the time, but he does not make it look good.
Yeah, this is not a John Hughes sort of like pay on to his hometown. This is sort of like visit East Stabbington. Yeah.
Welcome to Murderburg.
There's a couple of odd scenes in here. There's one of them where we have Aunt Ida. Played by, I don't care, Edith Massey.
Edith Massey is only known to claim to fame. She's in, I think, every John Waters movie.
Well, the early ones, not the later ones.
Yeah.
There is a scene where she is trying to convince her nephew that he's gay. And the nephew is like, no, I'm good with women. And she's like, well, couldn't you just try to be gay? And it's like this whole... 180 of the
complete
usual
mirror of the top movies or the attitudes of the time, which we no longer have.
Yeah, sure. And of course, I'm sure this is just John Waters making commentary because he is gay and whatever. Although, if all these people are his friends and his friends' relatives are willing to be in the film, that's a pretty big support network for 1974.
Yeah, I gotta say, pretty remarkable.
Yeah.
It does kind of remind me, or I guess it could be sort of an antecedent or precedent for Love, Simon. You ever see that?
No, I meant to, because I actually met the mother of one of the cinematographers randomly. But how was
that? Basically, it's about a high school kid and his issues coming out. Mm-hmm. But there is a sequence where he's like, can you imagine if this were reversed? And instead of telling your parents that you're gay, you have to tell them you're straight. And it's this whole sequence of mom, dad, you see, oh, boys there. I like girls. And the mother starts crying, and the father goes, no, it's just a phase you're going through. It's like another one. And, have you tried dating people of the opposite gender? And then there's a girl saying that she's a lesbian. No, sorry, saying that she's straight. And the mother's going, I did this to you, didn't I?
I smoked when I was pregnant. Yeah. I don't know. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm sure that a lot of this is reaction to norms, not only as portrayed in Hollywood, but as John Waters faced growing up.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that he was at an age and at a time that he felt he could take it to extremes. We have some police officers who showed up later, and I swear they were hired by Yosemite Sam, because they're just sure to go and rootin' tootin'.
Critter varmint. They're actually yelling after as they're chasing her through the swamp or the trees or whatever. Yeah. I don't get a lot of swamps in Baltimore. Mm. But we're going to get you. Yeah, you're surrounded.
You crazy
firing into and firing in the just shooting in the air.
Yeah. Well, there's also a scene when Dawn Davenport's had her big debut, and the cops show up, and they just start literally, they're not even saying anything. They're trying to get everyone out because Dawn has shot at least one person, and the cops were like, everyone needs to get out, and they just sort of aim their guns upwards. So,
yeah, I sort of wonder about this movie, just a little thing historically. Mm. Remember the Hays Code?
Sure.
That was abandoned only 4 years before this movie came out. It was in 1968.
I was going to say, if it wasn't, it was shot and killed by this film.
I just wonder if some of it is like, well, no Hays Code, watch this.
Yeah. Happy days are here again. Blam, blam, sex, sex, in your face. Blah, 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 blah. So, yeah. Yep. I suppose, I just honestly think that it's his reaction to social norms, society, beauty, even like in a way, there's kind of an interesting commentary on the gatekeeping of beauty, right? Who gets to say what's beautiful? And, you know, even
and stardom,
art world, in a way, right?
Yeah,
which I will admit, I was not thinking about when we watched this film and when I made my notes. And you know, with notes like everyone in this movie is at some point hideous, sometimes more often than not. So it's, I don't know. Do you think it's that time we should, we didn't circle back to your original quote there.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Does it make me think more about the movie?
Mm.
Before we decide whether we did or not, I'm going to say, that quote is actually very brief, but very influential. And I'm really glad you brought it up because I think it actually may color how I feel about this film. What about you? Do you think it changed your outlook at all?
A little bit. It changed the interpretive level of the film for me. I can't say it changed how my personal reaction to the movie, but it did make me think about it more.
Yeah. Was Max's personal reaction something that required a mop or not? Let's find out. So let's get to that part.
The finish.
So Max, you'd never seen it.
Yeah.
I forced you to watch it. We were.
You did.
I will say, we don't usually get to watch films together.
Yeah.
After I picked it, I thought about it and thought about it. And then I was visiting Max and I actually did say to him before the film, if you at any point want to stop watching the film and we just decide to choose something else, we can do that. But we didn't.
We did not. The movie did not defeat us.
So, Max, what is your take on Female Trouble?
I don't ever want to see it again.
Yeah.
Okay, yes, I'm sure there is. Cinematically, yes, I see the significance. I see some of the cultural significance. I didn't enjoy it at all. Mm. At all. It's just ugly. It is ugly, vulgar, and honestly, not that interesting, other than the shock value. And again, this is coming from 50 years later. We've seen stuff like this. Maybe not as extreme.
Skid marks.
I mean, I don't, I'll just say it. I don't understand the cult following. It's just, I'm not saying it's wrong or bad. I don't get it. I don't understand it. It didn't. I don't feel the urge to memorize the lines. I don't feel the urge to ever see it again or go and see it with a crowd. In fact, honestly, I think I'd be more embarrassed seeing with a crowd. I was embarrassed enough seeing it with you.
Well, he feels like that about anything, so it doesn't really matter.
Well, yeah, that's just... No, then I'm just embarrassed in public if I'm seen with you. But no, it's just like, the movie for me is one long cringe. It's an hour and a half. My cringe muscles were sore by the end. Mm. The only thing I will say is Divine is impressive. They just are. The sheer force that they bring to everything they do. It's like those actors who, good or bad, whatever, they give 110%. They don't leave anything on the field. What about you?
Now, are you saying, is that a no? I'm not sure here. Is that a no?
Oh, I see. You mean, would I recommend it? Oh,
I'm
I don't know. if you are a cinema completist and you want to see what was a, this was a significant film. This may have been countercultural or underground or whatever you want to call it, but it's been influenced. I told you, made me think of Love, Simon. I wonder if that was influenced by it. Maybe there are things I could see coming out of this. If you are a cinema completist and you have a strong stomach, yeah, I'd say see it. I just
is there anybody
didn't
personally
enjoy it.
You would recommend it to?
No. No, there is no one I ever wanted to speak to again is what I tell to watch this movie.
Max is a nice man and he knows nice people.
Yeah. What about you? How did it work for you?
Well, I've seen this before, although it has to be. It's getting close to 40 years ago that I saw it. It is not a pleasant film at all. Mm. On some level, the movie's actually boring. Why do I say that? Mm. Because Dawn Davenport's character literally does not change. It is scene after scene of Dawn Davenport screaming at some point.
That's true. She doesn't grow.
No, not only does she not grow, but it's the circumstances teach her nothing. And even the moments where she starts off seemingly happy, something comes in or someone comes in to send her right back to her most core nature, which is to scream and be upset at stuff. And she, strangely, for somebody who comes from so little, has a real sense of entitlement, which is a very interesting mix. But, you know, after the fifth repeat is kind of boring. I had notes like, I hope this movie didn't cost more than $35. Because there's literally nothing spent on the view. You know, it's not meant to be pretty. It is. Mm. And in that way, it exceeds. Just when you think the movie can't get worse, it does.
Yeah.
I didn't know where the movie was going, but I didn't care. Because there's nobody in this film you want to root for. And as Max said, at certain points, he was like hoping there would be an execution scene. Lucky Max. Yeah. That being said, especially because of that quote that you brought in from The New Yorker, mm-hmm. I think this is a film that's easy to dismiss. It's very easy to instantly go, this is nothing but, you know, grotesquature, and it's shock for shock value and nothing else. And I don't think that's true. Mm. And at the very least, John Waters embodies the whole idea of auteur. His earliest films were written, produced, and directed all by him. And we're still talking about him 50 years later.
Yeah.
That counts
for
something.
He had an impact. You can't deny that.
He did. And he managed to do a lot of his learning and still get accepted by Hollywood, which is not easy to do.
No.
Would I recommend this to anybody I know? Well, Vince, go ahead, watch it again. You'll love it. But most people I know don't, that's not why they go to the movies. And most of the people I know would not be interested in the gross out scenes. Certainly nobody I'm related to. So I'm going to be on the same boat with Max, which is I appreciate it better now, having talked about it, having heard the quote from it, not the Rex Reed quote. I don't want to see it again either, and I don't want to go back and see either of the other earlier films. I know one of them is Pink Flamingos, and I can't remember the other one. So
Multiple Maniacs is one.
Yeah, but we have a third judge in this series, our friend Patton, who we had just had a personal meeting with, a very personal face-to-face.
About 15 feet away,
Well, we actually went and saw him in concert, but we were there.
We were there.
I swear, we made eye contact.
He looked in our direction at least once. Yeah.
And remember, we did get permission. So
yes, we did.
This is what Patton had to say about this film. Quote, okay, I love so many John Waters films, but this is far and above his best. It's still weirdly timely. It is a saga about punk rock. And crime and evil celebrity. It has the funniest opening 10 minutes of any film I've ever seen. My God, John Waters forever in our hearts. And he's still alive, end quote.
Yeah, you see, this is what I mean. There are people who get something out of this movie. I just don't.
Yeah. And,
God love him. Good. All more power to you. doesn't do that for me.
Well, and the other power we would want to grant to you is the power to answer our poll question.
Yes.
Oh boy, what a segue. We'd like to know, what is the cheapest made movie you've ever come to love? Who took $25, some string and tape, and made gold? You can let us know in the following ways. Please email us directly. You will get one of us, one of the two of us. There's no team. There's no employees. There's no whatever. It's just us.
There's no skill, no talent, no ability.
Mr. Shatner, we're shooting.
Yes, we promise. Check out priceline.com.
You can email it. Us at maxmikemovies.com. You can go to our website, maxmikemovies.com. All our episodes are there. You can leave comments. You can talk to Vince. You can give us suggestions, etc., etc. You can go to our Facebook page at maxmikemovies, where you can, once again, leave comments, suggestions, etc. And hey, we're coming up on episode 300, and we got no ideas. That's a hint. Mm-mm. You can also find us on every podcast app ever made, ever to be made, or ever no longer in existence. But we're going to finish up this little short series on Because Patton Said So next week. But how? How? Yes. That's,
well,
that's
I
the
think
question. How?
Fortunately, Matt, I can answer this question. I am here. It is dangerous to go alone. Take this. and then take this with the clown hammer. Bonk. Well, we're doing another movie, possibly a little raunchy. This involves large, sweaty men wearing leather chaps.
With no pants?
Big hats. They might not, I'm not sure. Around large, sweaty animals. Oh. Yes, it's a cowboy movie! Whee! This is a cowboy movie from the Criterion Collection called 40 Guns.
40.
With Barbara Stanwyck. Ooh. So I'm assuming it takes place in a big valley somewhere.
That is a big valley.
Ask your parents. That's what we'll be watching as we close out Because Patton Said So. Yeehaw.
This has been a co-production of The Voice of Max and The Movie Wrench.